Hi, my name is Ashley Jordan. I'm a research scientist at New York University and a project director to the Hepatitis C Synthesis Project. I'm also a doctoral candidate in epidemiology at the City University of New York. I'd like to acknowledge the work of my co-authors on this paper and the NIH grants that supported this study. None of the authors of this paper have any conflicts of interest to disclose. So as you all know, hepatitis C infection is a source of significant yet preventable morbidity and mortality among people who inject drugs, henceforth referred to in this presentation as PWID. The hepatitis C epidemics became established in populations of PWID from around the 1960s to the 1990s, both preceding and exceeding the epidemic of HIV. With respect to the New York City community, by the 1990s, 80 to 90% of PWID were hepatitis C infected. A number of interventions were implemented to address bloodborne pathogen transmission via non-sterile injections, primarily with a focus to address the HIV epidemic. So these interventions included medication-assisted treatment, expanded needle and syringe exchange programs, including provision of needles and syringes at pharmacies, and antiretroviral therapy to treat HIV. As you all know, these interventions were associated with very significant reductions in HIV among people who inject in New York City. However, the impact on HCV prevalence and incidence has been less clear. Our research objective was to examine trends in hepatitis C prevalence and incidence among PWID in New York in the period of 2006 to 2013, and compare these trends to data from 1990 to 91 and 2000 to 2001. With respect to the estimated incidence, objective number three, we looked at incidence among new PWID and among those newly initiated PWID, those that were currently injecting. So the methods. This data comes from the data set that Dr. Desjarlais presented a couple of presentations ago. It's an annual cross-sectional survey of PWID entering drug treatment in New York City. Participants were given a risk behavior questionnaire and tested for hepatitis C and HIV. And again, the data were compared to data from two earlier time periods, data from the same program, same methods, and all of this is published data that many of you are probably familiar with. So there are three discrete time periods of prevention programming that I'm going to be referring to in this presentation. The first period of combined hepatitis C prevention, with respect to prevention interventions in New York City, was prior to 1994. Limited prevention programming was characterized by the access to methadone maintenance treatment, limited syringe exchange, and HIV testing and counseling. From 1995 to 2000, or the initial combined prevention programming period, there was the continuation of methadone maintenance, a larger scale needle exchange programming, and hepatitis C treatments became available, although PWID were not regularly offered treatment. And 2001 to the present we characterize as expanded combined hepatitis C prevention programming, introduction of buprenorphine, expansion of pharmacy provision of syringes, expanded hepatitis C testing and treatment, and more PWID were treated for hepatitis C during this time period. Oh, I'm sorry. So we defined being an injection drug user as having ever injected drugs, yes, no. And that was for prevalence, and then for incidence, our cohorts were constructed of PWID who had initiated injection during the different time periods. New initiation was defined as people who had begun injecting within 6 years of entering the study, and current injection drug use was defined as having injected at least once in the last 6 months. So this was our incidence equation. I just want to go through quick a couple of assumptions in our hepatitis C estimates. We assumed that all participants were hepatitis C negative prior to their initiating injection drug use. We assumed that hepatitis C positive participants had seroconverted to hepatitis C at the midpoint between initiation of drug injection and entry into the study. For folks that had less than 1 year injection experience, they were assumed to have injected for 0.5 years in our analyses. And again, we assume there were no differential losses to follow up between those hepatitis C positive and hepatitis C negative. So these are some demographic data from our study sample. We had 1,535 total PWID. The age first, the mean age where folks first injected drugs was 24.4 years. We had almost 1,200 folks who were currently injecting in this cohort, and 400 of them had initiated injection drug use within 6 years. The last line shows hepatitis C antibody positivity. Among the total cohort, about 70% of people were hepatitis C positive. Among those who were HIV negative, about 65% were positive for antibody. And among those HIV positive, about 87% were positive for hepatitis C antibody. So this slide shows the trends in hepatitis C and HIV prevalence over the three time periods. So the initial initial prevention, combined prevention in 1990 to 91, more expanded but still limited combined prevention in 2000 to 2001, and then expanded combined prevention in the last column. So you can see that hepatitis C prevalence went down dramatically, 54% to 13%, 11.9%, and then in 2013, prevalence of HIV in the cohort was 4.3%. This doesn't necessarily mirror well. This was not what, as you can see, what happened with hepatitis C. Hepatitis C did drop between 1990 to 2000, but between 2001 to 2006 to 2013, hepatitis C prevalence among both positive and negative PWID stayed the same, not statistically significantly different. The last line, incidence of hepatitis C among newly initiated PWID remained quite high and was 19.5 per 100 person years in the era of expanded combined prevention programming. So basically what you want to get out of this slide delineates the HCV incidence among all of the study years in the era of combined prevention programming. Hepatitis C incidence doesn't really, it bounces up and down a bit, but pretty much stays the same through throughout the study years, again, to give us a overall incidence rate of 19.5 per 100 person years. So in the 25 years that combined prevention was implemented in New York City to address bloodborne pathogen transmission among people who injected drugs, hepatitis HIV prevalence decreased from about 54% to 4.3%. In contrast, our data suggests an ongoing high prevalence hepatitis C epidemic among people who inject drugs. Prevalence is still very high at 67%, and similarly, incidence is very high at 19.5 per 100 person years. And again, was not statistically significant from data from 13 years ago, so that's a very important point. So I just want to go over a few limitations. Selection bias with respect to representativeness potentially could have, is something to consider, as all of the PWID in our study were recruited from drug treatment. Hepatitis C prevalence relied on antibody testing. And because of the cross-sectional nature of the study, we were unable to provide direct estimate. We weren't permitted to directly measure incidence, but provide estimates of incidence And also in the same vein, relationships between trends in HCV prevalence and incidence and temporal changes in combined prevention programming can't with certainty be inferred to be causal. So despite expansion of current combined prevention programming, the hepatitis C epidemic persists with both high incidence and high prevalence. The differences in the impact of prevention programs may relate to the greater transmissibility of hepatitis C compared to HIV, and this just speaks to a need for greater and more consistent opioid substitution therapy, needle exchange, needle and syringe and drug injection availability and coverage, and more access to hepatitis C treatment as prevention. So despite successes in HIV control among PWID, given the links between the two viruses, any reduction in HIV prevention programming for PWID poses significant risks to hepatitis C control.
So, very good, Cindy. I was impressed by the difference between period one, where the main intervention was needle exchange, and in period two, where they had implemented from period one with little limited needle exchange to significant needle exchange. Mm-hmm. You saw your biggest reduction in HCV prevalence. And that was the major change between period one and period two, at least from what I remember. And that would have been a major conclusion.
Yeah.
I think you could have put in your conclusion. Needle exchange made this big drop, and then after that we added drug treatment and blah, 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 and we didn't see any change in the remaining years. That's my kind of take home of it. And I would have loved to have seen it all in graphs, mm-hmm. where the confidence intervals are displayed, you know, in bars. Would have been a lot easier for old eyes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can I possibly throw a little sand in that?
Go ahead.
Because I'm old enough that for half of my medical career, hepatitis C was known as non-A, non-B. And prior to 1994, you could not check the blood supply. And in fact, for every person that was infected with hep C by injecting drugs, there were probably, I don't know, 10 that got it from transfusions. And so so between the first period and the second period, that was eliminated.
What was eliminated?
The spread of hep C in the blood supply.
Oh.
I'll also mention the fact...
So that's another external confounder. That
yeah, I'll also add the fact Good. That I remember when I was in training in the 70s, we were treating drug abusers for bacterial endocarditis all over the place.
Right.
You never see it anymore.
Right.
And so these people were ending up having to have bowels replaced and the transfusions that were associated with that. So this presents, I'm really feeling old now.
Yeah.
But these are historical factors
that are
very important in looking at
things that were going on outside of her study. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
Good
point.
Yeah.
There are a lot of issues. I've noticed a bias in methadone programs, especially against starting young people on methadone. It's almost impossible to start people under 18, and a lot of people start injecting young, and that's when they get their hepatitis C. And even our syringe exchange program in New Mexico doesn't allow syringe exchange below 18. Mm-hmm. Now, they don't specifically ask for ID, fortunately, but there are still lingering barriers, even in states that are very
progression
committed mm-hmm. to addressing that.
How about
yeah, no, that's
Did
true.
You do needle exchange in under 18?
Actually, I mean, that's a terrific question. I know anecdotally. Yes. I'm not sure if you want to. I don't know
Nobody
if you can enter.
Don't ask, don't tell. Don't
yeah.
Ask,
well, I mean.
Don't ask, don't tell, so they can do it. Okay.
It's
yeah.
against the law in California.
Okay.
Our program would get shut down if we were caught giving
injection applies to minors, despite the fact that it's not like injecting drugs is safe below 17, 364 days.
Yeah, and I'm sure the age criteria for OST in New York State is the same. I know it's kind of generally the national issue. Yeah, that's what I thought.
But even among providers, I sense, this person's too young, why start them now? Because you want to start them now so they don't get hepatitis C.
Yeah,
is there an exception
that
they're already documented to have hepatitis C, even though they're a minor?
I don't think that would. I don't know. I actually
might
don't know.
It might be grounds for an exception if they're a documented user. You're not initiating drug use in this person by giving them treatment harm reduction.
I would say that harm reduction never initiates drug use because it's not a trial thing to do.
Right, but I mean, yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. But it might be a grounds for an exclusion if they've already, a documented drug user, documented infection, and now you're doing harm reduction to preventing. Spread to the public.
Yeah, but the forces out of the barn if they already have hepatitis C.
Well, I know for them,
right.
But in other words, there's a public health motive for having the harm reduction needle exchange in a minor who potentially is spreading to other infection drug users. Right? I mean, let me ask the question. How about STD prevention in a minor? Someone with syphilis, gonorrhea. Even though they're a minor, they get treatment?
Well, in New York, you can be treated for STDs, and you can be treated for drug problems, regardless of your age, without informing your parents.
Right. But needle exchange not?
Needle exchange, nobody's going to ask.
Okay. Practically speaking. But he's saying you're sort of a federal...
An entry into MMTP.
Methadone. Below 18 requires special hoops.
Yeah, and it's very hard to overcome it. Mm-hmm.
Sort of like, yeah.
And insurance won't cover it under 18. Yep.
Yeah, I have a question that doesn't revolve around methadone. In my experience, it has nothing to do with the course of epidemics. It helps individual patients.
Mm-hmm.
I was just struck as we were thinking through the question of why we have these differences between hepatitis and HIV.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the comparison of New York City and probably the main cities in Connecticut with a lot of other places around the world where they have huge Hep C epidemics among injectors, but no HIV epidemics to speak of. So there's a huge difference in consciousness where in a lot of places Hep C is the big one.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in New York, for example, there's still, although it's beginning to fade, the memory of the Holocaust injectors went through.
Yeah.
And so then I'm wondering where you don't have these big HIV epidemic memories, there may be ways to use the organizing of drug users against Hep C to help
Yeah, I think that's incredibly insightful, and I think that there is a really key role for advocacy by drug using communities, and I think that drug user advocacy in New York City is very strong. And I can't speak to international settings where drug users advocate for hepatitis C related policy change. Maybe you could or you could.
Well, even as look at the limited allocation of funds coming from CDC.
Well, yeah.
That's where the advocacy's got to be at the policy level on the federal level.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone has other questions, or I don't know if we wanted to have joint questions.
Well, yeah,
or
if anybody has any questions for any of the speakers, because we still have time.